Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for August 1st, 2021. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. After a week off for vacation last week, I am right back here with you. Thanks to Zach Haydorn for hosting in my absence last week. Always does such a good job with all of his audio duties here on the Torch, so I really appreciate that. But we're back in the saddle this week as things get wild and crazy here for the next month or two, perhaps, with the way things are lining up. So you can always email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Got a couple emails to get to tonight, not too many. So if you're listening live at pwtorchdailycast.com, you can send an email to get through maybe quicker than you would on the phones. You can also call on the phones. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. I'm going to talk about, again, the big shows in pro wrestling as we do here each and every week. We've got Impact Homecoming that we will run through, and I'm actually almost done with, not quite done with, I'll give you the results, and if you want to talk about it, we can. Also look ahead to SummerSlam. NXT TakeOver 36 is coming up as well. My co-host tonight, Tom Staub, who also co-hosts PWT Talks NXT on the Torch family of podcasts, will have a lot of insight on the NXT goings-on heading into TakeOver. And AEW, they've got their homecoming episode coming up on Wednesday night, returning to Daly's Place after a few weeks on the road. Full lineup for that, as well as, of course, the big AEW reporting that's out there that CM Punk and Bryan Danielson are headed in. I'm not going to spend too much time, I don't think, on this past week's episode of Dynamite, because you can find my thoughts on that episode, almost 3 hours worth of thoughts, in fact, on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show after Dynamite on Wednesday night. We took a lot of calls. Didn't even get a chance to get the emails, in fact, because almost all 3 hours were dedicated to phone calls about that episode of Dynamite. So Wade and I riffed on just about everything on that episode of Dynamite. So go ahead and wherever you get your podcast, tune into that episode with my full thoughts on this past week's episode of Dynamite. We'll go now to Tom Staub, PWT Talks NXT co-host and my co-host here tonight on Wrestling Night in America. Tom, thank you for joining me tonight.
My pleasure, Greg. Looking forward to a light chat on a slow news week.
Well, I mean, it's slow in that there are not a lot of – we don't have a major pay-per-view that came – last weekend. We don't have a major pay-per-view to preview for next weekend, but we do have a lot of big news to talk about. But I want to get to Impact Homecoming results. That was on Impact Plus last night. It was a Homecoming mixed tag tournament, and Homecoming King and Queen tournament is how Impact advertised it. Drama King Matt Raywalt, the former Aiden English in WWE, debuted as Deonna Purrazzo's partner. They defeated Hernandez and Alicia Edwards in the first match. Matt Cardona and Chelsea Green defeated Petey Williams and Jordan Grace in match number two. Steve Macklin attacked Petey Williams after the match. Tommy Dreamer and Rachel Ellering defeated Brian Myers and Missy Hyatt, who did not actually get involved in the match. I think she was a little confused in storyline as to why she was called by Brian Myers to be his tag team partner. Crazy Steve and Rosemary defeated Falaba and Tasha Steeles in a non-tournament match. Diener defeated Willie Mack. Back to the tournament, Matt Raywalt and Deonna Purrazzo defeated Matt Cardona and Chelsea Green. DK of Rosemary and Crazy Steve over Dreamer and Ellering in the second round. Josh Alexander defeated Black Taurus. Raywalt and Purrazzo defeated Decay in the final, so they were the homecoming king and queen of this tournament. And in the main event, Eddie Edwards defeated W. Morrissey. Right now, I think about halfway through the show, I'm at Raywalt and Deonna versus I'm on Decay versus Dreamer and Ellering. So that's kind of where I am. But again, if you want to talk about the results and the debuting Drama King, not only debuting in Impact, but being a part of the winning team in this tournament. So you can always call us up, email us about that. And I'll be keeping a close eye on Twitter, Tom, because PWG's Mystery Vortex is tonight where they don't announce any participants, any matches ahead of time. They are back in California for this show, so it's going to be interesting to see how Twitter blows up tonight and what wrestlers they are able to have for that show. So that and everything else that you mentioned is going on. Before we get into that, before we get into anything else, the big news from yesterday, Tom, on a Saturday of all days, was Bray Wyatt being released by WWE. He hasn't been seen on TV in some time. What's your overall take on the fact that Wyatt has been released? I mean, I guess at this point we shouldn't really be surprised when you have guys like Braun Strowman being released, WWE not breaking the bank to re-sign Daniel Bryan, and him apparently going to AEW now. So certainly seems to be philosophically a very different, idea of how to retain or sign talent. Just a few years ago, and they were hoarding a bunch of talent to keep them from AEW. But now Bray Wyatt is released. Your immediate thoughts on that?
It does seem to be new territory as we all are learning how Nick Khan is approaching things. And just from where I'm sitting, this sounds cold, but the most surprised the closest I came to surprise in the past couple rounds of releases was with Killian Dane, just because I felt that he was a guy you could push to the NXT championship level or at least title contention believably if you wanted to. And even when it came to somebody like Braun Strowman, I was just like, listen, if you're looking at benefit ratio, I don't know if how much you're paying him and the pain that he can be backstage sometimes, relatively, is worth what you're realistically going to get out of him at this point in his career. So it seemed like an easy cut to me. And I've heard similar arguments made for Bray here. And even on the Keller Hotline last night, Wade was imparting a suggestion that he's heard some rumors backstage that that Wyatt may have been creatively difficult to work with to certain extents, and that probably made this an easier cut, if not going as far as to say that the writing had been on the wall for quite some time. But again, just from where I'm sitting, this one actually is very surprising to me and saddening, just because I am a strong believer in the creative mind of Wyndham Rotunda, even if it was folly after folly after folly in how far they didn't allow him to go with certain storylines and how far they did go with the booking him repeatedly to the point where he just had to disappear from TV for a while just to heal from not being around before he could show back up and start doing something again. But it just seemed to me, like especially when you consider how much merch he'd been moving as the Fiend, that you just, whatever was going on with him, you just give this guy the time. This is one of those guys that you want to think of as your guy. And if I compare him to Taker, I don't mean to go back to like 2014 when everybody was saying, including myself, like maybe this guy could be the successor to Taker on screen, but maybe just age role of not necessarily locker room leader, but when you think of just one of your guys that is associated with your brand, that no matter what, they're just lifers under the contract. He seems to fit that bill, and just like what a wellspring of ideas. So mm-hmm. so that is why it is very surprising to me that they did let him go. So that's my general take on where I'm at with it right now.
What do you see as the legacy of this Bray Wyatt character and the Fiend? I don't think we ever really got a satisfactory end to this story. I don't know how you write a satisfactory end to the story, by the way. So I'm not sure what the end could have been for the Fiend. But going out with a whimper at WrestleMania didn't really seem to do it. For as much time and energy as WWE and Wyatt had invested in this character, and really, this is you mentioned The Undertaker. This is probably the most outside the box in terms of the paranormal and stuff that WWE doesn't usually do since The Undertaker. And I think kind of that might even be why you're talking about Wyatt or The Fiend as a successor. So all of that being said, what's the lasting legacy of this character in WWE? Does he open the door for WWE to do more stuff like this, or was he sort of an aberration? And now that we've gotten back to fans being in the stands, you think maybe WWE backs away from that kind of supernatural storytelling?
Yeah, with what turned out to be temporary retirement of Lily, it did seem to me like they were like, okay, this was our plaything during the Thunderdome era when we wanted that kind of excess, and it was excess. Someone like me who defended it from time to time, it even got to be too much for me, and they broke their own rules to a point that I think was detrimental. But it did seem like they consciously thought, well, we're going back in front of a live crowd. Let's peel back on this. And I guess we're still in the phase where we're waiting to see if that is actually the case now that Lily is back and Alexa is trying to, like, levitate herself up to the Money in the Bank contract and whatnot. But legacy, I mean, I guess I would hope that whether it's looking at the failures of the Bray Wyatt character and the Fiend character, or whether it's which I feel are almost entirely on a booking standpoint and how far they were willing to let Bray go with the stories that I remain confident. I've said this multiple times, but I remain confident that everything Bray and the Fiend were doing made sense to Wyndham Rotunda. And it just never got to a point where he was allowed to tell the full story or anything more than the first half of the first act on television. I confidently feel like this all made sense to him. So hopefully, whether it's looking at the failures in booking that kind of a character and how far they went with him at certain points, whether you look at the supernatural stuff or whether you look at the Hell in a Cell match with Seth Rollins, which, like, even for me being such a fan of the guy, that was just an awful direction to go for both people involved in the match. Whether you look at that or whether you look at what the potential positives were, like what the audience did latch onto that they didn't run all the way with, there were multiple times in the cult leader incarnation of him and in the Fiend incarnation of him that had audiences genuinely watching the product more closely and wanting to pay attention to little clues and little visual blips during his creepy video packages, or whether a puppet was going to show up backstage and trying to figure out what it all meant and trying to, like, honestly, watching Monday Night Raw the way that some people would watch Lost. And that's incredible that he was able to get it to that level, but they never paid anything off with it. So I would hope, this is way too optimistic, but I would hope that that would be sort of the legacy in a way. Like looking at, okay, we've got 8 years, I mean, almost exactly 8 years of this character on the main roster. Just episode of NXT 8 years back with me and Kelly dropped, and it features Bray cutting a really, really good promo announcing that he's going to the main roster, and we're already to the point where he has debuted and he's feuding with Kane. So we've got almost exactly 8 years of this guy on the main roster, demonstrating what can work about this kind of character and what doesn't when you only commit to it halfway or when you commit to the wrong things about it.
Yeah, I think ultimately we may never know how much of this character was Bray Wyatt's idea and how much of it was WWE, and what parts of it were Bray Wyatt's idea, what parts of it were WWE's, right? Because there were some things that were good, especially the beginning, as you point out, but they got so far off track the longer it went that it really struggled to keep people's attention or to keep people caring about Wyatt as a wrestler or the stuff with Alexa Bliss. That was too much for a lot of people. A lot of people drew the line there. And, you know, we've heard the stories about Bray Wyatt's creativity in the wake of his release, but we just don't know, right? We just don't know what Bray came up with, what WWE came up with. So it's hard for us to give credit to him without knowing the full story of how that worked. So the last thing on this before we go to other topics, as with most big name releases, the idea of going to AEW has come up. And I'm a little more sour on that idea for Bray Wyatt than with others. You know, putting aside the fact that you don't want AEW to be someplace where all WWE castoffs go, no matter how underutilized or whatever the case may be, they were in WWE. You know, without The Fiend, I don't know how much Bray Wyatt, the wrestler, has to offer. You know, he was never a world-class athlete. You know, where does he fit in with AEW? AEW is certainly welcoming to all kinds of body types and things like that. But can he walk in the door as someone other than Bray Wyatt and still have that aura? And who knows? He may be able to create a character. AEW may be open to creating a character similar to The Fiend. So far, I don't know that Tony Khan is really up for that sort of thing. But, I mean, what is the potential, do you think, for Bray Wyatt in AEW? Is that something that you think should be explored, or do you not see a fit there?
Well, short answer, I don't see a fit. The context here being that I am someone who is very, very sour on AEW in general, and I do feel like he would be well-received, because that seems to be the default from the AEW fan base, the very rare occasions, usually only when I get the Wrestling Night in America call to action, where I'm like, oh boy, all right, I better do this Dynamite thing this week. I notice that a lot of the best reactions go to the WWE wrestlers, or the former WWE wrestlers. So I feel like he would probably be well received, but I just don't know if what we've seen him do to this point, and maybe there are other layers he can go to, but what we've seen him do to this point, I'm not sure it fits with what AEW has presented as what they feel pro wrestling is. And, what they do in the ring, whether I consider it what pro wrestling should be or not, it doesn't seem to fit with, I guess that mentality seems to coincide a lot with the criticisms I see often leveled against Wyndham Rotunda as not a good worker, who can't back up the stories that he's trying to tell backstage with the stories that he's trying to tell in the ring, or rather with the action in the ring. Whereas I'm completely contrary to that. I feel that pro wrestling is all about storytelling, and that is all that Wyndham Rotunda does. And he also understands the tall but stout nature of his physique and how to use that in the ring in very imposing ways. And I feel like very rarely has the bell rung on one of his matches and there's not at least some level of mystique there, where for better or for worse, we're wondering what is going to happen. And I think that is very valuable. But just having, again, Wrestling Night in America call to action, just before this, I finished up Impact Homecoming, and it sort of dawned on me, like, you know what? If he wants to keep doing this, maybe this is a great landing place for him. It doesn't have the shine that AEW has right now, but they've proven, again, for better and for worse, and with varying degrees of success depending on what fan you ask, but they've shown a commitment to going deep on wacky storytelling like what Bray likes to come up with. So that actually dawned on me as I was watching Homecoming as maybe a really good fit for him.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned watching Homecoming, because we'll dig into that a little more later on, I think, then. But, you know, when you say that, my immediate reaction is, oh, he leads Decay, right? Rosemary, Crazy
Steve.
Yeah,
right.
he comes in as the leader, that sort of thing. So that's kind of what clicked in my brain when you said that. But, yeah, it's not going to be a slam dunk that he goes to AEW, like I think it was for Miro or somebody else like that. But it should be interesting to see where he tracks after this. I mean, wrestling's in his blood. You know, he's named Wyndham Rotunda. Like, those are some major wrestling names that he has. I mean, his dad is you know, Mike Rotunda, who's been in the wrestling business for a long time. I don't know if he's a guy necessarily to walk away, although his brother apparently has, at least for the time being. You mentioned your AEW call to action, and I do want to ask you about that. I said I wouldn't talk a lot about Dynamite because I was all talked out on Wednesday night with Wade. But as someone who only watches AEW periodically, I'm always interested, especially in your thoughts, on what you saw when you watched it. You know, a very big episode based on the volume of calls we had on Wednesday. Certainly a lot of people felt that way with the big opening tag match with the big stars. And, of course, Chris Jericho versus Nick Gage at the end, announcing Chris Jericho versus Juventud Guerrera the next week. So for someone who is self-professed not hot on AEW, what was your take on Dynamite this past Wednesday?
Yeah, I will say that it's a subject that I generally try to avoid because I am often so very negative on it that I think it borders on spiteful, and I'm not sure how much that adds to the conversation, especially since I'm a guy who covers NXT and these companies have put those two brands against one another, so it sounds very biased at the same time. But it is last time I was on with you, or last time I watched AEW for Wrestling Night in America anyway, it was the week right before that Game of Thrones branded show. And it was good enough. It was compelling enough. I was like, okay, they kind of hooked me a little bit that I did watch the following week, and then I fell off after that. But it was interesting enough that it made it easy to be more objective about it and easy to try to see what fans of the brand see in it. And a show like we had on Wednesday just put me right back at being like, man, it's really difficult for me with someone who likes wrestling for the reasons I do, as previously stated, mostly storytelling and character development and things like that, to see, like, even with the cheering fans and the great ticket sales that they have and the upward trajectory in the ratings, it's very hard for me to see how this is managing to translate in the long term, as it seems to be, because it all just seems like such a big goof to me. And this is one of those things where, like, depending on which angle we approach it at, there are various different specific things that I could call out. But it just seems like, again, only watching periodically because I generally have not liked what I've seen. Most of the times when I tune in, it just seems like the culture within that company is just it doesn't take the art form as seriously as I would like to see it taken. And the way what I'm talking about is generally how most matches, not all matches, but most matches I can watch, and it doesn't seem like they are trying to make me believe. It seems like the idea is we're going to get a laugh out of wearing these basketball outfits and talking to the camera and being silly in our being the elite kind of way, and we're going to do our flips and do our crazy spots, but I never get the sense of competition out of it. It always seems like performance art to me, which I know is a term that's been thrown around in a positive light lately from a certain maybe growing section of the wrestling fan pie chart. But I still come at it in a sense where I want them to hook me with a story that I can buy into, and I want it to look like it's a competition where people are trying to win, and it doesn't seem like that's the case with the vast majority of matches that I watch. Of course, this was particularly an issue in this particular week's main event, but that's almost a separate conversation in and of itself. And furthermore, with the... I don't think there was anything that stood out. Well, I guess maybe this does play into the main event more. But I also, we've got a pattern building, or maybe it's already built, of things happening like what happened to Matt Hardy and what happened to Ricky Starks. And issues where you know, you look at the other leader in worldwide wrestling entertainment, and I realize that I just said what the letters stand for. That was not the intention. You know, you look at that, and they have developed a pretty darn good pattern of stopping matches or being careful when certain things happen, and it seems like the ball is so much on the other side of the court in AEW that it worries me when someone like Bryan Danielson signs and, you know, he's openly admitted before that he will hide concussion symptoms or he wants to push himself too far. And, you know, I'm not in his shoes. I'm not in his mind. He's a completely different human being, and I do respect the passion that he has for his art form. But it's still just like, oh boy, I'm waiting for the next worst thing to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's not for everybody. You know, we had a lot of people who did not like the main event of Nick Gage versus Chris Jericho. And that's something that, you know, that violent aspect with the blood and things, AEW has gone to that well more often. And I think it's just, it's one of those deals where, you know, Eric Bischoff would famously say, I took a notepad and I wrote a list of things that I could do that was different than WWE. What was WWE not doing that I could take advantage of? And it seems like in certain aspects, AEW is doing that as well. And with the violence and with the blood, they want to be a place where fans can satisfy that bloodlust. And I know that sounds negative, but I mean it in, you know, a very old school way where blood was commonplace. And WWE just doesn't do that anymore. And so AEW wants to take advantage of it, and there are fans out there who want their wrestling to be realistic, and they equate blood with realism. And that's just one example. You know, there are others of ways that AEW is trying to take advantage of perhaps a blind spot for WWE where they can draw fans, and it seems to be working. Ratings are going up, as you said. Attendance at the arena shows are high. So, you know, we'll have to see if that is able to continue. Obviously, the long term is what's important for AEW. And I apologize in advance because our two email questions are both about AEW tonight, Tom. So you'll have to put on your AEW analyst hat for a little while longer here on the show. And we'll go to our first email question here. And this is from Tim, a VIP member from Virginia. Tim says, good evening, Greg. Big fan of your work. Never miss a show. Curious to get your perspective on this. Given the level of violence that we saw on last week's episode of Dynamite, while I don't know how it affected the ratings, nor am I aware of any negative reaction from sponsors, do you think it's possible that Tony Khan intends for Rampage to be similar in tone to ECW, with the show airing after primetime on Friday nights? While it's definitely a risky move, it seems like there could be an audience for more adult content in pro wrestling, especially when the creative at WWE lately really seems to be catering more and more to children. Thank you for taking my question. Look forward to listening to you and all the callers. Have a great night. And I can't stress enough what a great time this is to not only be a VIP member, but also a part of the truly wonderful PW Torch community. Thank you so much for the kind words, Tim. Appreciate your patronage of the Torch and appreciate you listening each and every week. Yeah, with the ratings turned out to be pretty positive for that segment of AEW Dynamite this past week. The sponsorship thing, Domino's, that's a whole can of worms that we won't get into. But Rampage is coming up later this month, debuting, I think, in a week or two on Friday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. So it's out of prime time, as Tim noted, after SmackDown on TBS. And so if you're a fan or if you're AEW, Tom, whichever, you know, angle you want to take it from, do you strive to make AEW Rampage different than Dynamite? Or do you sort of make it a third hour of Dynamite that people like Dynamite, and so you'll just do the same thing on Friday nights? What would you do, or what do you think Dynamite will do with that hour of Rampage on Friday nights?
Yeah, and with the Domino's thing, I kind of feel like that's just them seeing something trending on social media and saying what they needed to say, and they're not going to pull an ad anywhere. But that's just my brief shot, my brief take on that. The Rampage thing is such a question mark. I will confess that I am curious what the approach will be. I'm not sure how much stock we can put into the big deal that they're making out of the first few episodes, just because, I mean, you know, of course you're going to make a big deal out of the first few episodes of anything. When WWE revived the main event brand, what, like 6-7 years ago at this point, it featured top names like John Cena, I think, was on the first or second episode. Punk was probably on there. You know, so it seemed like
Superstars,
a big deal
when
at
they
first.
Had superstars on WGN. They had a bunch of stars the first few weeks, and then they sort of turned it into like a Velocity or a Sunday Night Heat.
Exactly, and Sunday Night Heat is sort of my touch point here, just because it at least had occasionally things happening on it that seemed like, if I looked at it with a more analytical eye, if I actually went back and watched it now, maybe these things weren't actually that game-changing, but they at least pertained to top angles, you know, especially when they were leading into the pay-per-views. At least that's how I remember it from the late 90s, year 2000, whatnot. So I'm wondering if it will settle into that territory, but I think, I will confess that it's a difficult question to answer, but I think if I'm Dynamite, I just approach it as like a third hour, that it's just, it's another place where we can tell our top stories without cramming so much into 2 hours, and you can look to that hour on Friday night for continuing story developments that are going to be important to AEW fans, more so than Dark or Elevation. So you don't want to miss it, but I don't know. Like I do wonder if it is going to taper off after a little while, and maybe that will be purely ratings dependent. But yeah, I think that you want to do the same kind of thing you're doing with Dynamite, just treat it like your third hour.
I think that might be the key, is load it up and see what kind of ratings you can get, and then if it starts to taper off even with your big stars on there, then sort of just treat it as a third hour of Dynamite, or maybe even something lesser than that. Expectations have to be pretty low, because Friday night at 10 p.m., out of prime time, so it's not going to be a key ratings metric necessarily for the network, and it's going to be a lower viewed show anyway, just because of the time slot. So, you know, mm-hmm. Do you put something of import on there that is not going to be watched by as many fans as watch Dynamite? Rampage will be a little more important, I think, because it's going to end up being the go home show really for pay-per-views. It'll be the last show, the final hard sell before pay-per-view. So it's going to have that going for it on pay-per-view weekends, which I think will help. But yeah, I think, you know, part of what WWE has done poorly is making Raw and SmackDown feel different. I remember when they tried to make the third hour of Raw feel different for a while, and it just never succeeded.
For 2 weeks.
Yeah. And then, so I think if you are AEW, I think you want to present that episode of Rampage differently than how you present Dynamite, whether it's, and you know, they're going to be taping in separate locations, so that's going to make it easier. And as far as the look and just the presentation, you know, you want to be able to know that when you flip on Dynamite, you can tell you're watching Dynamite, versus when you flip on Rampage that you can tell you're watching Rampage. I think that's important too. The look of the show has to be different. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see how it turns out, at least for the first few weeks. We've got to the bottom of the hour here. This is Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, joined by PWTorch.com contributor Tom Staupe here, talking about the big events in pro wrestling. 515-605-9345. Is the number to call if you'd like to contribute to the discussion, or you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. Let's go to our first phone call. Thank you for waiting. Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, what's your first question for us tonight?
First question is on creative control in AEW with Daniel Bryan and CM Punk's Pizzly, getting that in their contract. So far, has there been any disagreements between creative control? Because I know a lot of people in that company have creative control, like Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks, and Kenny Omega.
Yeah, a lot of executive vice presidents in AEW. Tony Khan has the final say. But with guys the level of Danielson and Punk that are presumably coming in, I think it's fair to question what kind of control they'll have and how they fit into things. Tom, we haven't really heard any major reporting on disagreements or differences amongst the EVPs in AEW, which is almost a miracle in and of itself. But how does this fit in? We don't know for sure that Punk and Danielson are coming in with creative control. At least I don't. But, you know, how do you fit that in and giving them the creativity that they seek, because they're both very creative minds for the business? How do you fit that in with all of the other fingers in the pie in AEW?
Yeah, I just imagine that it has to be a major part of the contract negotiations and just an idea of, like, what milestones are you going to work in to this first contract? Like, what does Punk want to make sure that he has on the docket for him if he comes in? This is a different question. It's sort of, you wonder what roles they're going to be playing, and I keep wondering, is Punk going to be like, I keep fantasizing, like, I think it would be fascinating if he came in and did sort of like a sellout role, if he tried his damnedest to turn heel and, you know, slick his hair back and wear a tie and play the opposite of what we're expecting from CM Punk. I recognize that that's probably impossible with this guy after the anticipation for his eventual return that is all based around who he is and what he represented up until 2014 in the wrestling business. But that would interest me. But I do wonder if he's going to be more of a special attraction and not be there all the time, whereas with Danielson, I wonder if it's the kind of thing where you can't not just face him off with Kenny on his first night in, and then maybe have Kenny cut a promo saying something like, oh, no, we do things through rankings here. Haven't you heard? You're starting at the bottom. And then you go through, like, this year-long story of you know, Brian trying to work into contention. But even if anything that I'm fantasizing there is anything that's being considered, I just think that that has to be hashed out in negotiations ahead of time. Because, yeah, you do, I don't know, I mean, we're talking about Daniel Bryan, a guy who seems to be set up by the company to take it easy with by WWE with a role in creative. And then my very pessimistic view of it is like, oh, well, look at that. He booked himself into the main event of WrestleMania again and then got the hell out of Dodge. But it does make you wonder. But I think that's a preliminary thing that they're going to have to hash out.
Ryan, back to you for your second question.
Yeah, second question is on John Cena. With him working all these house shows and six-man tag team matches, is there a concern that he might get injured along the way since he hasn't been in the ring that much lately?
I think it's always a risk for injury. I think there's a way you can do it. I mean, you could get injured, you know, walking out the door of your house. So, you know, I think there's also a point that by putting him on these house shows and putting him in the ring, you're taking perhaps a chance that you don't need to take if you're WWE. I'm sure, I don't know, I'm sure he's taking it very easy in these six-man tag matches. I will be able to see for myself. Saturday night, I'll be going to Fort Myers, where John Cena is advertised for that show. So I'm anticipating that. But, you know, if you're WWE, I think probably boosting ticket sales to these house shows is worth the minimal risk that you take of putting John Cena in the ring. Now, maybe you could, if you're WWE, you could advertise John Cena, have him show up and do an interview and then do a five-knuckle shuffle to somebody and don't have to put him in the match. But again, I'm sure in the match he's not doing a whole lot more than that anyway. And then I think there's also the idea that for a guy who's been away from the ring as long as Cena has, it probably doesn't hurt to get your sea legs under you a little bit and work a few matches before you come back in such a prominent match against Roman Reigns at SummerSlam.
Yeah, and Greg, is that the Germain Arena?
Yes, it used to be Germain Arena. It's now Hertz Arena.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm guessing you were at the same show. I saw them come through for the 2015, I think they called it the SummerSlam Heatwave Tour, and Cena main evented against Rollins. And the Cena coming out was the loudest pop I've ever heard in person. My vision vibrated inside my skull from how loud everybody was around me. But so look forward to that, I guess. But yeah, I similar to you, getting your sea legs under you. He's working in tag matches, so he's not pulling the full weight. But you know, like you said, that is a risk you always take. Triple H tore his quad just walking across the ring to break up a submission, and the one that I tend to go to is The Rock against John Cena. While he was either in the middle of filming or he was getting ready to film Brett Ratner's Hercules movie, and this is a little bit before The Rock becoming the highest paid person in Hollywood, but that was when he injured himself doing his own finishing move. He injured himself doing the Rock Bottom, and it completely changed the way that they had to film his Hercules movie. And I think that is the main reason why we haven't, that on top of his success is a key reason why we haven't seen him come back and do a lot, except for like giving another Rock Bottom to Eric Rowan. So I think that John Cena's got to have that in the back of his mind, but it is a risk that he's consciously taking. But yeah, I agree that he's probably not kicking his butt too hard at these house shows.
And Ryan, back to you for your final question for us.
Final question's on Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff. I think there's a chance he could get back on the ballot on the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame since he hasn't been on for like 13 or 14 years.
It's possible. We've seen that with some wrestlers who have passed away, and Dave Meltzer will do an obituary in the Observer, and a lot of people will take notice and say, hey, this guy's career looks pretty good when you write it up this way. Let's get it back on the ballot. So I think it's possible. I don't know what the chances are, but I'm sure there will be some discussions about that after his recent passing. Tom, I don't know if you want to jump in there with any thoughts on that.
No, I agree with you. I think my general take on Orndorff is that he had everything you would want in a wrestler. I really enjoy going back and watching his stuff, but he was a victim of – he was about as big a deal as you could be without kind of translating into the – in a significant way into the rock and wrestling era. It was just, I mean, victim of timing, and his reputation didn't really peak at the right time. But yeah, as unfortunate as it may be, someone's passing may increase that profile again. So yeah, I think that there's a shot at that.
All right, Ryan, thanks for the phone call this week. Look forward to hearing from you again soon.
Thanks for taking the call.
Absolutely. Just to put a bow on our AEW discussion before we move on, homecoming in Jacksonville, Daly's Place this week, Cody Rhodes versus Malakai Black, Miro versus Lee Johnson for the TNT title, Christian Cage versus The Blade, The Bunny versus Layla Hirsch, and Chris Jericho in his third labor takes on former rival in WCW, Juventud Guerrera. So that should be interesting. And then our email question about AEW, our second email question about AEW. This is from Chris from Reading, Pennsylvania. He says, Wade recently brought up on a podcast that he wants AEW to concentrate on just being the best AEW and not focus on integrating with New Japan, Impact, etc. What are your thoughts on this? Does the inter-promotion shenanigans enhance your viewing experience, and do you think it helps AEW more than if AEW were to just concentrate on their own roster? Go VIP. Thank you, Chris. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. And Tom, as sort of an outsider to the AEW stuff, I'm kind of interested to get your thoughts on AEW's relationship with these other companies. I think it's worth it just to say that you're doing it. And again, this is another avenue that Tony Khan and AEW can drive in that WWE is not, right? WWE is not working with other companies. They've long been on their own, an island unto themselves, not really working with other companies. And most, you know, a lot of major companies get that way too, but AEW has fully embraced this Forbidden Door and is working with Impact and New Japan. So this is another blind spot for WWE that AEW and Tony Khan seem to take advantage of. But I'm wondering if you think it would make a difference to you as someone who is on the outside looking in. Do you think AEW would be more – would you be more apt to watch it? Do you think it would be a better product if they were not partnering with New Japan or Impact? Or do you think it doesn't affect their creative enough to make that kind of a difference?
So I think that you're right. It definitely fits in as one of those checklist items, like what can we do that WWE isn't doing? And for someone like me who tunes in and sees a lot of things like the excess of blood or, you know, whatever you want to pick, and I'll look at something like that and be like, well, you know what? There's a reason why WWE moved on from that. Yes, we can say what we will about the PG era and you know, what WWE's successes and failures creatively and their approach to things is a different conversation. But there are sometimes just simply health reasons as to why they do things like banning pile drivers or why they don't have people dropped on their necks every other move. And someone like me who goes in with that attitude watching AEW, I think that the relationship between brands is actually one of those things that does interest me. And when I have dropped in on Dynamite, I don't feel like, yeah, sure, you've got Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson there, but I don't feel like I've seen so much of an integration that it seems to take away from Dynamite. And, like, sure, I watched Lance Hoyt defending the IWGP U.S. Championship, and I kind of wonder, well, what really is the significance of this on the program that I'm watching? So there is that. But when I watch something like Impact, it does, which is also something that I watch rarely, although conversely, on the rare occasions that I watch Impact, I always wish that I made more time for it because it's always enjoyable and I like the product they put on. With something like Impact that is very self-aware in its relatively low profile, it seems extremely beneficial to have that relationship, and it makes this is why I found the whatever they called that Game of Thrones show and the way that ended compelling, because it opened that door between those brands, and we haven't seen that in a significant way in so long. So that does add a level of intrigue, and maybe the bigger question is where I feel a company like WWE is trying, and yes, in a large part failing, to bring in new fans and cultivate new fans through Peacock and through Bad Bunny and whatever else, and through having, you know, a PG rating and being on Fox. They're trying to bring in new fans. Dynamite and AEW seems to be appealing to the pre-existing wrestling fan, which seems to have a cap on the number of us that there are. It doesn't seem like that number wants to grow very much. And so when you're doing that, I think the question is, how much does this really help grow the brand? But yeah, coming from my perspective, I do think that is the one key thing that adds an element of genuine intrigue to what they're doing. And it's the main thing that I do actually like about their different approach.
I will stipulate to the fact that I've not heard Wade's comments on this. So I don't know if there was more to this or than the emailer said or anything like that. But I've never watched an episode of Dynamite where I've thought, man, there's too much Impact involvement, or man, there's too much New Japan involvement. Like, that's not – I've never sat there and said, but for the involvement of these other companies, this would be a good product, or this would be a good show. You know, it's never – I've never felt that way, and I think in a lot of ways it adds to what AEW is doing because it is so different than what WWE is doing and does allow them to stand out in this marketplace that WWE has had such a large share of for so long. And, you know, I think it does excite a lot of fans to a certain extent. The idea that AEW is willing to work with these companies, the idea that you truly don't know who's going to show up on Dynamite from week to week. It could be Jay White. It could be you know, somebody from the NWA, you know, Thunder Rosa when she was in the NWA. So I think they may need to sand down the edges in terms of explaining to their fans why these people are coming in and what purpose it serves AEW. But, you know, those are very minor things. I think the excitement that it brings and the fans that it attracts sort of outweighs whatever negatives there might be. So I'm kind of with you on that, Tom. Turning gears now to, before we get to Darrell from Georgia, I see you on hold. I'll get to you in just a minute, Darrell. But I do want to hit on NXT before we go to Darrell. Two big things. Karrion Kross versus Samoa Joe made official for TakeOver 36 coming up on Sunday, August 22nd. It's going to be an inverse of what we usually see. SummerSlam will be on that Saturday, the 21st. TakeOver the next night on Sunday, the 22nd. Don't ask me what my plans are for Wrestling Night in America that weekend. I don't know yet. It may be two nights of Wrestling Night in America. It may be just Sunday night. I don't know. Anyway, Kross on Monday Night Raw. Losing to Jeff Hardy in his first match quickly. Hardy had only been on Main Event, doing what I thought was a pretty pathetic-sounding promo after the match that didn't do him any favors. And then Jeff Hardy going on the COVID-19 list, and it had come out that Karrion Kross was supposed to lose to Jeff Hardy the next week again. And he ended up beating Keith Lee. So your thoughts on the presentation of Kross on Raw while simultaneously building him up to Main Event TakeOver 36 as the champion against Samoa Joe?
So you mentioned the post-match promo, and that is where I'm negative. That, and then when he was introduced the following week, I don't think they said this the prior week, but when he was introduced to wrestle Keith Lee and they called him a modern-day gladiator, I think, which doesn't pertain to anything that Kross represents except for the gear that he wears, the same kind of thing that, you know, Sonya Deville would wear, or I think there's a guy in the Dark Order that wears it, that sort of gladiator-looking stuff. I'm sure there's a name for it that I'm not aware of, or it's not coming to mind. But, you know, they're just like they're fishing for things in the whole, the very arbitrary, like, oh, my gosh, Karrion Kross, you just lost your debut on Raw. What do you think? Everybody's going to fall and pray. Well, that doesn't mean anything. We have no clue.
Yes.
What that means. So that's where I'm negative on it. And I know I've heard so many other arguments against it. And you know, I can, this is one of those things where I choose to come at it subjectively, because for me, none of this really bothers me. There's historically been such a disconnect, and it is not a good thing. Could this be a better situation? Absolutely. Should Vince pay more attention to what is his, basically his feeder system, his developmental system? Yes, 100%. Would we have a better product and better continuity and more satisfying character arcs and everything? Of course we would. But just realistically, historically, that disconnect has pretty much always been there. And so it doesn't surprise me to see a character presented differently, even overlapping with their NXT run, because another layer to this is that, you know, we can complain about this, and we are right to when we do. And there are other examples that are more near and dear to me that aren't like a Karrion Kross that I don't really care what happens to him personally. That it does bug me a bit more, but there always has been a like, even going back 8 years as Kelly and I do every Saturday on VIP. There always has been that idea that Raw and SmackDown, no matter what the work rate is on the black and gold, when you go up to the red or the blue, it's a different level of competition. So so maybe Kross is, you know, got caught up in the lights or wasn't ready for the big stage or whatever they want to spin it as. But you know, I can't disagree what anyone who is up in arms about this, I can't disagree with anything that they have said. Everybody is right to be perceiving what they're perceiving about it. But just for me, I view them as separate stories. Kross is coming toward the end of his story on NXT. He's just beginning his story on Monday Night Raw. I can view those separately, and I don't feel it takes away from what has honestly been a quite good build toward this Joe and Cross takeover match. You can get, even if you wanted to say, which they're not going to acknowledge, but and I don't believe that they have to, but even if you wanted to say that Cross is no longer technically undefeated in WWE, the personal grudge between these wrestlers, and particularly with how well Samoa Joe sells it, makes me want to see the match. And I'm not 100% convinced that this is a walk-off for Joe. So I am very curious what is going to happen on that Sunday night.
I think where a lot of people are frustrated with the presentation, and it's not even about Karrion Kross. It's about the presentation of the NXT champion on Raw.
Right.
And it's not that he lost. Right, it's not, wins and losses don't matter in WWE. It's not that he lost in his debut. It's that he lost with coming out cold, with none of the entrance that got him over in NXT in the first place. It's that he lost in less than 2 minutes. It's that he lost to Jeff Hardy, who was losing on Main Event in the week prior to this, and he lost with that promo afterward that contributed nothing to the advancement of that character. So, you know, it's to the point where people are wondering if Vince is sabotaging NXT. I mean, that's how bad the presentation of Karrion Kross was. So it's not so much that he lost. Yes, we are used to WWE kind of wiping the slate clean with these NXT wrestlers that they bring up. But when you take into account all of those aspects of it, and then the reporting that he was going to lose the next week to Jeff Hardy again, it's hard to see where this is just another NXT call-up being treated differently than anyone else.
Yeah, and of course, if Vince McMahon is trying to sabotage a brand that is under his umbrella and has the WWE logo on it, that's just silly. Of course it is. And I've gotten a lot of pushback on this, but I view it as, and of course, it all goes back to Vince McMahon not being as involved as he should. If Vince McMahon is the final say on creative in WWE and character direction and character presentation, then he absolutely should be at least slightly more invested in the developmental system. And this is historically an issue. At least we've heard stories coming out of OVW, at least I have, and I'm sure there are other ones, but just this past Tuesday night on the Daily Cast, I was making the Deacon Batista comparison and saying, like, well, if that was a televised product and more people got to see the Leviathan at the county fairgrounds, then maybe we would have been more upset when we saw Deacon Batista. But things worked out okay for him, I would say. So maybe it's just a situation that we are allowed to see this now, and it's obviously become its own brand. So we have preconceived notions before Vince reframes things. But one of my longstanding issues with NXT as a developmental brand is that it obviously has a very different mentality than Raw or SmackDown. The whole idea behind recrafting NXT from the reality show that it was into what it became when they moved to Full Sail was to have a miniature Raw and SmackDown so developmental wrestlers could transition to the bigger stage and it would be seamless. They would know exactly that and all of that. But the thing that's missing is the guy you're working for. And I feel like there's been miss after miss after miss that could have been hits if the mentality was, even if this is a hard pill for us to swallow as fans of various wrestlers that we've seen come through NXT, just realistically thinking like, okay, the idea is that eventually you will be under Vince McMahon's thumb, and what is he going to want to do with you? So yes, a large part of that failing is on Vince McMahon not being a part of it, but, accelerate to now, after Vince and Nick Khan have finally decided, oh, maybe we will pay a visit to that little performance center we have down there. And they walk through and they see a guy like Omari Palmer, who has been toiling away in the performance center sight unseen for years. And Vince goes, oh my God, look at that giant guy. I want him on TV. And even if we watch him work a match and he's not as good as Adam Cole, that's the kind of wrestler that Vince McMahon looks at and wants to book. So that's what his developmental system should be trying to do from a business standpoint. So again, it's a situation where I agree with what everybody is saying negatively about it, but I still just look at the reality of the fact that Vince is still in charge, and you've got to defer to that.
You may be the first person in the history of this podcast to say that Vince is not involved enough. And so congratulations, Tom, for that
oh, God.
One. Although I
can feel the unfollows coming.
I take your point. At Tom Stelp, by the way, on Twitter.
Yes, yes.
One more thing NXT related, then we'll get back to the phones. The big news coming out of NXT this past Tuesday, Dakota Kai turning on Raquel Gonzalez. I think most people had figured this was the end game at some point with this relationship, with Raquel being champion and Dakota picking up wins and not really seeming to be in that title contention, or not acknowledged by Raquel to be in that title contention. What were your thoughts on the timing of the turn in terms of, did they do it too soon? Was it the right time? Should they have held off till later? And what did you think of the turn itself?
The turn itself, under a microscope, I feel could have been done better, because they didn't contextualize. And I thought that Shotzi was up next for a title match, so maybe they had it in their minds that they wanted to contextualize the turn around something involving Shotzi, and that got taken out of their hands with Shotzi going to SmackDown. But the issue with the turn itself, no matter how clever Dakota's dialogue was, and it was, and her delivery was good, it's still, the segment only existed for the turn. They didn't have anything else that they were doing where the turn came as a surprise. It was just like, okay, these two wrestlers are out there to say absolutely nothing, just to sort of gloat a little bit and show the title off to the fans. Obviously, this is where it's going to happen. And, of course, that's easy for me to say, because spoilers were all over Twitter when they taped it ahead of time. But, indeed, we had previously predicted on our pod, on the Daily Cast, that Dakota was going to be up next, so the turn would be coming very, very soon. And it was pretty telegraphed that it was going to be there. But, timing-wise, in a more general sense, I think it's really, really good, because Raquel is right. Apart from newcomers like Gigi Dolin or even someone like Zoe Stark, who has really carved a name for herself already but isn't quite at that singles title challenger level, she has gone through everybody except for the person that she wasn't acknowledging, Dakota. So even though I would look at a takeover booking of the match, the match that we've been anticipating pretty much ever since the duo formed, even though I would look at it and be like, okay, this is another, if not easy, at least I'm pretty confident notching this one up for Raquel. The question is, who's next? And I would say Frankie Monet, but she's slumming it on the Robert Stone brand. So it really, the timing of it is what makes me wonder. Do they finally, at long last, as we have wanted for years, put the belt on Dakota, and then you've got a whole fresh roster of challengers ready for her? It is hard to see me doing that, but the timing of it, as you ask, is the key here that has that question mark in my mind.
Yeah, the whole Frankie Monet thing is interesting, because I never looked at her attempts to break Aaliyah away from Robert Stone as, oh, she's trying to do that in order to be a part of the Robert Stone brand herself.
Yeah.
And so that was
exactly.
That was a surprise to me. And then, like, even her relationship now with Jesse Kamea and Robert Stone is kind of weird. So I genuinely don't know where that one is going. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's like you said, a minor storyline. So it doesn't hurt anybody, I guess, to be involved in that. Yeah, so it does look like Kai versus Raquel for TakeOver 36. That would be a pretty big NXT Women's Championship match. Let's head back to the phones. The 478 area code is Darrell from Georgia. Darrell, welcome to Wrestling Night in America this week.
How you guys doing today? How you doing, Greg? How you doing, Tom?
Hey, man.
I'm doing well, Darrell. Thanks for calling.
All right. I know, Greg, you preparing for school just like I am to start back, hoping it ain't been as stressful as it has got up this way. Getting ready,
Darrell,
for that.
Don't remind me. I go back on Tuesday, so I get one more day of reprieve, but Yeah, it's coming.
I start tomorrow.
Ooh, okay. Your last bit of freedom. I'm honored that you're using your last bit of summer break to call into Wrestling Night America. I am honored.
Well, I didn't have a break. I still had to go 12 unemployed. So.
Oh, are you? Okay. That's
yeah,
fair, then.
So. So, but yeah. But also, you guys were just talking about something that my first question, I only have two questions, but this first one is quite a doozy. And it's about, can it be another wrestling boom? And not even a wrestling boom, just an increase maybe in fans and stop this downward slide and losing fans and not gaining, and just a wrestling boom to per se, where you enter in the case of mainstream. And is it, and I have a top three list of reasons why it's not one. And I know you was talking about Vince, and he's my number one reason why. Vince and cronies who are like Vince apologists and yes men, like Kevin Dunn or John Laurinaitis or people like that. And I feel like Vince is somebody who should, my reason for that, for him is number one, because he's been in it probably the last decade. He's been showing you that he needs to step down. Even somebody like George Steinbrenner had to, I don't know if I'm saying his name correctly, but, you know, over the Yankees, he had even to step down because he started even sliding the Yankees, and his way, his train of thought and everything on his day-to-day and hands-on and trying to control everything was costing the Yankees, where the kids had to tell him, hey, Dad, you had no choice but to step down because you're going to mess up this franchise. That's what I see about Vince. He needs to step away from creative. He can be a figurehead that speaks to the stockholders and stuff like that, but that's it. Number three in my list would be the wrestling media itself, to a point, because it seems like today in a lot of wrestling media aspects or dirt sheets or however people want to call it, you're starting to see more biasness slash fandom when it comes to talking about the wrestling and reporting on it, because they don't understand how much power they have over today's hardcore fan, and whatever they say is regurgitated a million times over as other people's thoughts and stuff. And a lot of times you're starting to see in some major people who do the media and stuff, how they do it, it seems more biased in fandom than it just is regular reporting. And my third would be the hardcore fans itself and how toxic sometimes they are and unwelcoming to new fans and stuff like that, that drive them off as well. Those three points are a reason why I say it can't be a wrestling boom. So going off that, looking at those three things I put out there for you, would you agree, disagree, and can it be another wrestling boom, or can it not be another wrestling boom just because of the times and how everything is and how stuff is looked? That's my first question.
Oh, I think there can. Your first point supposes that WWE would have to be a part of that boom, and I don't know that that's true. I think it's fair to ask, can there be a wrestling boom without WWE, the worldwide leader, being a part of that? And that's a fair question. I would say that there can be. We're seeing sort of a mini boom with AEW for the short term anyway. We'll see what the long-term effects are. But, you know, Vince isn't going to be around forever, and it's going to be interesting to see what WWE looks like when he is out of power. And so, you know, if WWE becomes something that appeals more to a broader audience than apparently does right now, sure, a boom can take place. That may not be for another few years, but that would certainly, again, address your first point. You know, there are booms in other industries where I think points two and three also apply, whether it's, you know, the gatekeeping of online fans or the media and how they cover. I mean, the wrestling media is such a small part of what a boom would take anyway. I mean, the wrestling media is only read by hardcore wrestling fans who are already watching the product. You know, a wrestling boom would need mainstream people who don't watch wrestling right now, and they are the least likely to pay attention to any kind of quote-unquote wrestling media, dirt sheets, whatever the case may be. So I don't think that one really applies. But yeah, it would look different, I think, because of the way media is fragmented. A wrestling boom would look different than it did in the late 90s, where you could just measure it by television ratings. Today it would take so many other different metrics to determine what a boom is. But Tom, a wrestling boom, is it possible? And what do you think about Darrell's top three list of why it wouldn't be possible? Do you see some merit in some of those ideas that he has?
Your last point is important here to remember in the background, but I especially like, Darrell, your first point. After everything that I just said about Vince McMahon, which is sheerly looking at the reality of what WWE is right now, I absolutely think that we have seen boom potential talents, if you will, in people like Shayna Baszler, Kairi Sane, Kevin Owens, Adam Cole. The list goes on, but those are the first major ones that come to mind in recent years as people who, under a different watch, could have been much more major players. And, of course, you know, the book isn't entirely closed on a lot of the names I mentioned specifically. But I do feel that they are they had and may still have the potential to generating enough, just not and you know, have ripple effects on Peacock, if Peacock actually, like during Money in the Bank, I pulled up the app. I got home late and I pulled up the app, and they weren't even advertising to me that this was something that was going on live that I could click on. I had to go find it. So if Peacock cooperates a little bit, or, you know, pushes it a little bit more, I think that the buzz potential is there, and you're on Fox, and the buzz potential is there to start generating more word of mouth and bringing in fans like me when I became a fan in the late 90s just from flipping channels and going like, ooh, what's this? I think I'll tune in next week to see how the story continues. And then I started developing favorite wrestlers and wanting to see them win championships and whatnot. And that's how I got into it. So I think that potential's been there. It's just that through, you know, being under Vince McMahon's thumb, it hasn't panned out. But contrary to what I personally see on AEW, which, just taking this most recent week, was main evented by what, by my interpretation, was Chris Jericho just letting it get under his skin that people criticized him falling on an obvious crash pad. So he wanted to prove that he could do something, quote, hardcore, and did the death match, quote, style, which is basically just, you know, bashing each other with fake weapons, you know, light tubes that are specifically bought in, you know, the style of them that aren't going to cut you if they hit you, and you know, sugar glass and whatever. And it's not wrestling, it's not storytelling, it's just doing spots. And I know everything that I say about AEW, almost everything I say about AEW, comes off as so disrespectful, and I will at least acknowledge that I'm glad for wrestlers who I was following before AEW became a thing getting opportunities where it didn't seem like they were going to get opportunities in WWE. For example, Serpentico, Sammy Guevara, MGF was going to happen regardless. But, you know, it's nice to see them getting those opportunities, but it's just not a – whether it's deathmatch or whether it's, you know, that opening 10-man tag, where I'm just not getting that sense of that illusion of competition where they're actually trying to tell me a story, that isn't going to hook me. But I absolutely feel that the wrestling program that Vince McMahon has developed, you know, without some of the creative blunders that he has just continued to stampede forward with, the PG, the general lack of blood, the no pile drivers, you know, the variety show feel where there's some goofy stuff on there and there's a little bit of something for everybody. I feel like all of that absolutely can still lend itself to hooking people with major storylines where someone like me can be flipping channels and
well, as much as that actually happens anymore today, you might have to find a different method of distribution in the next few years, like get yourself on Netflix or something. But, you know, just
I can't remember the last time I flipped channels.
Like that. Exactly. And yet, you know, my kids are discovering new shows on Hulu all the time. So if that was, you know, something that was distributed that way, you know, you could have a whole new generation of fans in that regard. But that's a slightly different conversation. I just think that with Darrell, what you laid down, I think that a boom is absolutely possible in the world that WWE is right now, sans Vince.
Okay.
Darrell, any follow-up or your second question there?
Okay, and a little follow-up to what you said, Greg. You mentioned, can it happen without WWE? I think not, because of what you were saying, stating about the mainstream. In the mainstream, AEW is not even seen as anything. The mainstream, when you hear anybody who don't know wrestling or don't watch it, the first thing they yell is, are you talking about WWL? Because some of them don't even know that it's even WWE now. And that's just like you trying to say somebody taking over the reins for the NBA, and the NBA done been around for 50, 60 years. So because of the longevity that they have, you can't have it without that leading force starting it, because they are the vision of that sport because of that leading industry. So I don't think it can happen. That's why I think you would have to tell Vince to sit down, because he have had his flaws with building people up for years. John Cena was on the cut until John Cena found the rapping and came up with Thugonomics, and then they seen it got hot, and then they pushed it. That's one thing about Vince that he can do when it comes to promotion. He still know how to promote somebody well when they finally get themselves hot, but he can't find and generate and make someone hot. That's my issue with that. And also, I know people say with AEW that they having some type of boom or thing. I call it a cap, because right now they're only capping off the people who are left, those hardcore fans, and they rallying them together. But those hardcore fans who they rally together are so toxic that they don't ingratiate themselves to welcome new people to come in. So that only goes so far. And plus, you have to get out there and start making a profit as well, because in the end of the day, you're a business, and a business needs to make profit, not just make noise. So that's another thing. Now, my second question would be on AEW and what happened this Wednesday. Everybody was thinking that it should have been Adam Page that get this match at All Out and get his crown and victory and stuff like that. Now with the incoming signings of Daniel Bryan and CM Punk, which looks like with that decision on what they did with him on Wednesday, look like indicating that one or both of them are coming in. So it's a change of plans, which I never heard an uproar for, seeing that he might not even ever get that shot now. And, you know, if that was in WWE, people would be crying and yelling and screaming about that. But because of the biasness of some people and things, they giving that a chance when if it's not good for the goose, why should it be for the ganter or whatever? But I understand that people will say, well, give them a chance. But is that an issue, or should we look at that and say that he not going to get his chance? And can they somehow keep him hot enough to whenever they finally get the opportunity to get him a chance to win that?
I'm glad you brought that up, Darrell, because that is one thing on my AEW list of topics to talk about that we didn't get to yet, is Adam Page and what we thought was a pretty clear path to Kenny Omega at All Out now being complicated by the potential signings of Bryan Danielson and CM Punk. I will say the bias that you're speaking of, Darrell, and I have seen people who are fretting over Page perhaps not getting that shot at Omega and missing out on an opportunity. I think the bias that you speak of, though, is, you know, WWE has shown an inability to capitalize on things and to push things out and to really tell complete stories, where AEW, I think, has a lot more of a leash because they've told better stories. So, I mean, I think the quality, you have to take the quality of storytelling into account. And I think there's more of a belief that AEW will pay this off because, well, they've done it in the past, as opposed to WWE, which their payoffs have been pretty poor lately. They have a poor track record of doing that. So it's not that it's bias, it's that some fans just believe, based on track record, that AEW can handle Adam Page maybe not facing Kenny Omega at All Out, and him not losing the kind of momentum that he might lose in WWE if the shoe were on the other foot. So I disagree that it's a what's good for the goose is good for the gander situation. Tom, I don't know how plugged in you are to the Adam Page storyline with Kenny Omega. I'm personally, and I make that argument to Darrell, all the while being firmly on the I think Adam Page should win, or should wrestle Kenny Omega and win it All Out. You know, I don't know that they should take a different direction with Punk and Danielson coming in. I'm certainly willing to listen to the ideas of, you know, doing Punk Omega or Danielson Omega at All Out rather than Page Omega. But do you think this is something that AEW needs to pay off with Adam Page at Omega, or at All Out rather, or can they get more out of this? And perhaps that opens up more options down the line for Page by having Omega face Punk or Danielson at All Out instead.
Yeah. And I will say, Darrell, I agree across the board with everything you were talking about. Like, so much of what you brought up, we could do a whole other podcast on. But I'm with you, and I do feel like AEW by design has had a limited appeal. I just watched that Woodstock '99 documentary on HBO Max, and it just seems like it's the exact same kind of people that they're trying to bring in and trying to appeal to. But I do have, you know, again, contextualized by the fact that I only drop in here and there, I do have some thoughts on Adam Page, but I am indeed plugged out enough that I do have to ask, where does All Out fall on the calendar?
I believe that's September. I believe that's the Labor Day weekend
Labor
show.
Day. Labor Day.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking after the, you know, and again, you know, just trying to be pessimistic and snarky about the brand. We've seen them tease things just because they're trending on social media and then not deliver in a satisfactory way. So in the back of my mind, I have that little thing going like, yeah, what's this Punk thing actually going to turn out to be? But it, you know, all evidence points to they've got to deliver on this. They wouldn't be signposting or in some cases remaining mum in situations if this wasn't going to actually come to fruition. But then that's when I start to wonder, is Punk going to be a factor in this? And of course, you know, where that Rampage show falls on the calendar, I think coincides with around like the fifth Labor of Jericho or something. And I, you know, being plugged out, I don't know if MJF said that all of the labors are going to be people other than him or, you know, whatever it's going to be, because it would seem obvious that MJF himself would be the final one. But, you know, depending on where that falls, that's a possibility. I don't know if that's really the storyline you want to plug Punk into, but I could absolutely see them going for Omega Hangman and trying to do something like Stone Cold helping, if memory serves, the Pop Heard Around the World, the Stone Cold helping Foley. Win the belt. I think that's how that went. I brought it up a couple times, and my memory's hazy, and I haven't gone back to check exactly what it is. But I could see them trying to replicate that, where they announce that Punk is going to be at All Out. They have him cut a video promo or show. You know, honestly, they're selling all these darn tickets. He should show up in the arena, and say that he's going to be at All Out, and maybe that is the presence he ends up is helping beat off the Elite. So Hangman can have more of a fair fight. But even in this loss, even with whatever reports are out there, it is indeed very hard for me to see this this long-term story. This is something I can see objectively, because subjectively, I've never seen anything in Page. And I haven't been watching the show consistently enough for him to have grown on me with this whole Dark Order bit. But when I have watched him, it's just been very bland, and I don't know why you'd want him as a top guy. But objectively, I see the groundswell that's behind him and how he is one of the most popular non-former WWE people on the brand. And so at this point in the story, why wouldn't you go for that climax? I agree with you, Greg, that he should wrestle Omega in the big spot and probably should win.
All right, Darrell, back to you for any follow-up.
The only follow-up I would say is, yeah, they have told some stories, but it's be your definition of what would you consider a story. Are you talking about a quick 2 to 3 week story? That's what they have been doing. I haven't seen the longest story I've seen on their television in the past 2 years is the story that they're telling now with MJF and Chris Jericho. Everything else from the Revival and the Young Bucks, a 2 week, maybe 3 week story. Then that went away. Multiple stories with Cody that went away and was dropped. Even with his wife was started up, dropped, and stuff like that. I haven't seen a successful story that I don't think anybody can bring up a successful story that went at least a month besides this MJF and Chris Jericho storyline and Paige and Omega to a point, sort of, kind of. But those probably the only two stories, and now it looks like they dropped that Paige story. I haven't seen a successful story. I haven't seen programs where they done did, which I would consider a program, something 1, 2 week, maybe 3 week at the longest, that they have done just to have matches where they did all types of spots, but didn't have in-ring storytelling with it. It was just a bunch of matches with spots in there. So I think that's when I mean by bias, that's what I mean. People see that, and then they'll say that that's a story, but really those be programs and just giving you crazy matches with spots that don't register or feel, or I don't even think you can remember or tell you how the match went after a few weeks went by. So that's my only point to make after that. Like I said, I only had those two questions, and it was good talking to you guys. And if you want to speak on what I just said about that, then yeah, but I'm good. And be good, Greg. You know what I'm saying? Your dad was getting ready to start, and don't let school stress you out on Tuesday.
I try not to let it get to me, Darrell. I appreciate the kind words, and thank you for calling in, and good luck to you as school starts soon for you as well. So, yeah, I mean, again, I think bias is a word you don't want to throw around too much, especially if it's just kind of a disagreement on what you consider a story versus a program. You know, that's a disagreement in definition, maybe, not so much bias or anything like that. But, you know, I get where Darrell is coming from, and there are a lot of people who have that argument and who make those arguments on online as well. So, Tom, before we go, we'll finish off with Impact. You said you watched Homecoming. You've been keeping a close eye on Impact. I'm all caught up now with Impact as well. A couple things on Homecoming that I wanted to ask you about. The first is the main event, Eddie Edwards getting the win over W. Morrissey. I've really been impressed with the demeanor of W. Morrissey with how he's been booked. And you can make the argument it's Impact, they're booking a former undercard wrestler as a big star or whatever like that. But I think Morrissey has met the moment that he's been put in Impact Wrestling. And I've really been impressed with his run so far.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And again, it's unfortunately one of those situations where I'm very plugged out, but this was a main event that I went into just remembering years and years and years of being critical of Big Cass. Again, NXT 8 years back, he and Enzo are just starting to do their thing 8 years ago today, and Kelly and I are very, very critical of it. And so I went in sort of rolling my eyes, and I honestly was impressed. I feel like this main event against Eddie Edwards was more impressive than anything I saw him do on NXT or on the main roster of WWE, just because he really seems to be, he seems to know who he is now, and he seems to be performing, wrestling. Yeah, there was enough wrestling in this weapons match that I feel like he was able to wrestle and portray himself fully in that character, not just be, I don't know, kind of like the thing I've been saying on NXT 8 years back is that it seems like he's He's out there because he's 7 feet tall, but he's already got the vote of no confidence because he's hitched to Enzo and he's losing all the time. It's just like, this is the kind of guy that they give obligatory wins to, and they're not even doing that with him. His ceiling just seems so low. And this match shattered that ceiling of my perception of him.
I wanted to ask about Matt Raywalt, Drama King, being put with Deonna Purrazzo. We had seen for a couple of weeks prior to this vignettes advertising his debut. You know, I mentioned when I went through the results here that my surprise of sort of putting him in this role right away and having him be a part of the winning team in this tournament. But as I watched this episode of Homecoming, it did feel like he and Deonna had interesting chemistry. I don't know if they're going to be paired together going forward or if this is just kind of a one-night thing to introduce him to the Impact audience as this character. What did you think of him from an in-ring standpoint? We saw him in, I think, three different matches tonight in the backstage interview, or not tonight, on Saturday night. And Deonna, and what kind of chemistry did you see with her? And do you think that this is a partnership that will continue on Impact TV going forward?
Yeah, Drama King, Matt, whatever, in our house he's known as, hey, it's Shaw's husband. It was really neat to see him appear here and then appear three times and be successful. And I would have been totally fine with Decay going over at the end of the tournament. But exactly what you noticed with the chemistry between he and Purrazzo is what I picked up on. It just seems like such a natural fit of this character that he's another NXT 8 years back reference. Even when he's just the job guy to go out and lose to the Wyatts or lose to Ryback when Ryback came and made an appearance. I'm pretty sure that, or maybe I'm thinking of a Big E squash. I forget who Ryback wrestled, but whatever. He's still, that's the character he's portraying. This has always been his Drama King character, and fitting that with the virtuosa character of Deonna Purrazzo and the way Impact has successfully run with it, I just thought it was a natural fit. And yes, the question is, do they continue this, or was it just for this intergender tournament? But that is the main thing I picked up on that made it feel like, okay, right off the bat, this is a good slot for him to be in.
Anything else you noticed about this show or anything that stood out to you that you want to comment on before we kind of wrap up?
You know what? I'll just highlight trying to force myself past the fact that somehow Chelsea Green manages to find her way onto TV. I just don't know how that keeps happening and how she keeps getting cheered. She's a mess, and I don't even mean the character she used to portray. I will highlight the continued use of Rachel Ellering. I've seen, she hasn't always been great or anything, but I've definitely seen potential in her going back to watching her on some indies before she got signed by NXT. And it was very disappointing to see that that never amounted to anything, her working on NXT. I am hard-pressed to even remember her appearing on anything other than the Mae Young Classic. But it's just nice that she is able to be her, able to do the tribute to the Road Warriors, which means so much to her, obviously with the family connection and everything. But it's not just a cheap throwback. It really means something to her. And she's just out there able to finally do what she does well, I feel, as an infectious personality, somebody that you just naturally want to see succeed. And she's finally able to do that for a bigger audience than she was allowed to under WWE, on like the coconut loop for NXT. So that's one thing that I'll definitely remember from checking out Homecoming.
All right, Tom, appreciate you joining us here on Wrestling Night in America this week. Why don't you go ahead and plug your social media and where and when folks can find your work for The Torch.
Appreciate it, Greg. At Tom Stelf on Twitter is where you can send all the tweets about why I'm crazy to say the things that I've said about Vince McMahon. And on Tuesday nights on this same phone line, you can, on the same Daily Cast line, you can talk to me, Nate Lindberg, and Kelly Wells after NXT at 10:30. We always have to, after the overrun and everything, we have to collect ourselves a little bit, and then 10:30 is when we go live. You can call us or email us, and those details are always given out on our social media accounts. And on Saturdays, if you go VIP, usually right around midday is that VIP show that I've managed to plug, I think, 5 separate times as we've been talking, where so many people who are still very relevant in the wrestling world today across various brands are cutting their teeth at the Full Sail studio for NXT. And we go exactly 8 years back to the day, which is where you can end up with little trivia bits like, oh, Bray Wyatt was released exactly 8 years on from the day that he was televised announcing that he was going to the main roster. And it's always interesting to draw those then and now comparisons, not to step on Frank Pettiani's show, but also just to look at the really, honestly, for better and for worse, fascinating journeys that these wrestlers were on, that many of us experienced in real time at the time. But even if we did, it's interesting to go back and analyze them in retrospect.
Absolutely. So make sure to check out Tom's shows and follow him on Twitter and give him what for after tonight's show. Tom,
yes.
Appreciate you joining me again, and look forward to hearing from you across all PW Torch Audio shows.
Thank you, Greg.
And appreciate everyone listening, calling in, and we'll be right back here next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can follow me on Twitter @GregMParks next Sunday, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.